Earn your JD from UNH Franklin Pierce School of Law and join the powerhouse in legal education. Now accepting applications. A top 100 law school ranked 5th for intellectual property law. Apply today at law.unh.edu. Is the right to abortion still specifically protected by the Constitution? Professor John Graby joins me to discuss. This is the UNH Law Podcast. Learn more about the law school and apply by visiting law.unh.edu. Opinions discussed are solely the opinion of the faculty or host and do not constitute legal advice or necessarily represent the official views of the University of New Hampshire. So, John, your latest Constitutional Connections article is linked in the episode description. The first portion of it dives into the concept of fundamental rights. What are those, and how does this abortion discussion tie into these?
You know, the default rule in constitutional law is that legislatures can abridge our freedoms through laws so long as they're acting in a reasonable, rational way. So, you know, for example, New Hampshire, like every other state, restricts the driving age to people who are 16 years of age or older. And that means that 15-year-olds can't drive. A freedom has been abridged by a law. But we say that's perfectly constitutional because there's nothing special about the right to drive. It's not specially protected by the Constitution. And it's rational for legislatures to use age as a proxy for sufficient maturity to drive. But there are some liberties that are specially protected within our constitutional order, and we call those fundamental rights. And those are rights that are, of course, specifically listed in the Constitution, like First Amendment rights, speech, religion, association, Second Amendment right to self-defense, Fourth Amendment right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures, et cetera. Those rights are different than the right to drive, you know, asserted by a 15-year-old, in that judges look much more skeptically at any law that interferes with those rights. Now, the most controversial fundamental rights are the ones that are not textually listed in the Constitution, but have nonetheless been identified by the judiciary over time as being fundamental. For example, the judiciary has said that the right to direct the upbringing of one's children and to direct the education of one's children is a fundamental right. The right to vote is not explicitly listed as fundamental anywhere in the Constitution, but it's been inferred from the structure of the Constitution. And probably the most controversial of these fundamental rights that are non-textual is the right to privacy. That right has been cited in support of the idea that the government can't ban the use of contraceptives. But more controversially, of course, it has been cited in support of the view that the government cannot interfere with the right to abortion. And so that's, you know, that's basically an overview of what fundamental rights jurisprudence is. And so the big question in the abortion context is, should abortion be a fundamental right? It is. It has been deemed a fundamental right in the past, but you know, that has been something that's been an idea that's been under fire now, obviously, for some time.
And I'm assuming this has basically come down from case history with regards to Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey. How have those cases reinforced that?
Before Roe v. Wade, which was decided in 1973, legislatures at the state level were basically free to regulate abortion as they saw fit. And some legislatures actually regulated to the extent of making it criminal to obtain an abortion or to perform an abortion. The argument was made, of course, that this was a liberty interest. There had been a case decided 8 years earlier, Griswold versus Connecticut, which was the case, I kind of referred to that a moment ago. That was a case that struck down Connecticut's law, making it illegal and criminal, actually, to prescribe or use contraceptives, even between married couples. And that was justified as being rooted in a right to privacy that's not textually written into the Constitution, but is inferable from various provisions of the Constitution. And so in Roe versus Wade, that same right to privacy was invoked in 1973 as protecting a woman's right, or it's a qualified right to terminate a pregnancy. But basically in Roe versus Wade, the court said during the first two trimesters of the three trimester pregnancy, the only thing the state could do would be to regulate to preserve maternal health. Mm-hmm. And it's only in that final trimester, after the developing fetus has reached a point known as viability, where it could conceivably live on its own, outside of the mother's body, that the state has an interest at that point in legislating to preserve the life of the fetus.
Now, the makeup of the Supreme Court played a really vital role in how important abortion rights are when it comes to privacy or just in general. From a political standpoint, politicians have made it to the forefront when it comes to selecting judges. As a political-minded person, it seems to be a lot of that comes down to Congress and the executive branch not being able to come with any statutes to finalize anything in the law.
Yeah, I mean, I think, certainly there's been no sweeping legislation at the federal level. There has been, in 2007, Congress did enact a law that was upheld by the Supreme Court, banning a procedure that some refer to as partial birth abortion. But basically abortion regulation prior to Roe v. Wade in 1973 took place at the state level. And then since then, Roe v. Wade and subsequent case law, which preserved at least the heart of the ruling in Roe, has placed limits on the ability of states and presumably the federal government, if it ever so chose to regulate in this area.
How's the current case of Jew Medical Services going to play into how abortion stands going forward?
Sure. Well, the June Medical Services case that was argued a couple of weeks ago features a new kind of abortion law. Just really, really briefly as background, Roe versus Wade was decided in 1973. In 1992, the court pulled back from Roe in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, but to the surprise of many, reaffirmed the basic abortion right and adopted a new standard for evaluating whether states are regulating permissibly in the area of the abortion, and it's known as the undue burden standard. And the court said that any law which has the purpose or effect of placing a substantial obstacle in the path of a woman seeking to choose an abortion is unconstitutional. All right, and so that was decided in 1992. So, about almost 30 years ago, wow, now. In the years since, states that are opposed to abortion have proceeded to sort of test the limits of what this undue burden standard permits them to do. Most recently, states have proceeded in two different ways. A number of states have enacted laws that are really designed to just create cases that will enable the court to revisit the abortion question and perhaps overrule Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey. So Alabama adopted a law that basically bans just about all abortions. A number of states have adopted laws that say no abortions once the fetus's heartbeat can be heard or shortly after the fetal heartbeat can be heard. These laws are clearly unconstitutional under current Supreme Court law. And so the idea of these laws is to create test cases to let the issue get back to the court. But some states have also adopted another approach and basically sought to regulate abortion out of existence. And that's the sort of law that's at issue in the June Medical Services case. This is a law enacted by the Louisiana legislature that says that any physician performing an abortion has to have admitting privileges at a hospital located within 30 miles of where the procedure is going to be performed. Now, on the surface, that reads as a law that's designed to protect maternal health, right? I mean, in a vacuum, one would read that and say, oh, the legislature is concerned that if complications arise during the procedure, the physician be able to get the patient admitted quickly to a hospital for additional care. But the reality is that abortion is a very, very safe procedure. Admitting privileges at hospitals depend on how often one admits patients to the hospital. And there's sort of a catch-22 here in that physicians who specialize in performing abortions don't need to admit patients to hospital often enough to either obtain or maintain their own admitting privileges. And it's quite clear, there's really very little dispute about this because lawmakers were on record as seeking to take advantage of this fact and to make it therefore harder for abortions to be performed within Louisiana. Now, a very, very similar law from Texas was actually before the Supreme Court just 4 years ago in 2016. And in a decision called Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt, Justice Kennedy, who was still then on the court, joined with the more liberal justices to strike that law down and basically to hold it was pretextual. It wasn't designed to preserve maternal health. There was really no showing of a benefit to maternal health but it had the effect of putting a lot of facilities, or if allowed to go into effect, it would have the effect of putting a lot of facilities out of business, facilities that perform abortion. And so this Louisiana law obviously bears a striking resemblance to a Texas law that was held unconstitutional by a majority of five justices of the court just 4 years ago. You know, what's changed since then is Justice Kennedy has, of course, retired, and he's been replaced by Justice Kavanaugh. And that, you know, history tells us that changes in court composition can make all the difference in the world. So we're really in a position where the court is facing a case where, yes, it's going to be deciding, you know, the future of abortion rights, perhaps. But we're also going to get some insight into what the court thinks about constitutional precedent, and, you know, whether or not it should uphold precedent with which it may disagree. So, you know, that's known as a Latin term for that, known as stare decisis. So to, you know, frame the question more formally, to what extent is a majority of this court committed to stare decisis in constitutional cases? Or will it be more aggressive in reversing constitutional precedent, you know, that it would not, you know, that justices, these justices would not have signed on to had they been on the court when these earlier cases were decided?
Now, it's kind of interesting to me, especially with what we've seen so far, especially with Kavanaugh, is he seems very strict to the Constitution for majority of it, even if it doesn't necessarily lie on the side of the conservative side of the aisle. I mean, do you have any predictions at all on how he might lie on this case?
Well, you know, as a lower court judge, he certainly wrote a couple of opinions that suggested to onlookers that he was, you know, that he did not embrace the court's abortion jurisprudence. You know, he'd used the term abortion on demand, I believe, in one case, and, you know, certain rhetoric that's associated with opposition to abortion. But that said, you know, what you say is important to remember. Justices surprise. They surprise all the time. And I do think that all nine of the justices would conceive of themselves, at least, as applying law rather than engaging in politics. And I think all nine would answer the question, does the Constitution permit legislatures to enact laws that you dislike? I think all nine of them would say yes. And if asked the question, does the Constitution disallow the enactment of certain laws that you might like, I think all nine of them may say yes. And so, you know, one never knows. That said, you know, I think people would be very, very surprised to see Brett Kavanaugh emerge as a defender of abortion rights.
Thanks for listening to the UNH Law Podcast. Be sure to comment and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Spotify. See you next Thursday. Join the powerhouse for legal education. Earn your JD, LLM, master's degree, or certificate from a top 100 law school. Residential and online programs available. Now accepting applications at law.unh.edu.